Welcome to another episode of Multiverse Musings, a DC Comics podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me as always is my co-host, Jordan. Jordan, how's it going?
I am super today, Adam. I am coming off a high over the first two of our live-action DC TV shows for this year are back, so coming off a high from that. Coming off a high from Constantine City of Demons, the movie releasing this week, which was phenomenal. We'll be reviewing that on our next episode. And we have a new movie to count down to, which is perfect timing, because another thing I'm coming off a high over is the new trailer we got for it, and that would be Aquaman, which we are 72 days away from now. So we'll start counting out of that, given that now that Constantine City of Demons the movie is out, Aquaman is next up on the slate. And yeah, 72 days away, my super friend.
Very nice, looking forward to it. It's getting closer, and the trailer, which we'll discuss as one of the main topics of conversation, certainly amplified my excitement, which I was already over the moon for. So I am somewhere in deep space now. If I'm over the moon,
it's funny. A lot of times, like, we'll be counting down to the movie. We'll be so excited, and you'll think that you couldn't be any more excited for the movie, and then they'll drop another trailer, and you'll be like, "Yeah, my excitement level just went from like an 11 to a 12 now."
Yeah, and it hasn't gone in reverse yet, so that's good. And actually,
that is good.
None of the trailers that we've ever gotten in terms of the films have caused something to go in reverse. So that's good.
Absolutely.
Why don't we just jump right in and get to our now we've been doing them consistently, the weekly comic book recommendations.
Yes, indeed. Let's do it.
So what do you got for this week, Jordan?
Well, I have, since we're recording on New Comic Book Day this week, I can actually talk about something that came out today, which is Superman number 4. I read it this morning, the latest issue of Brian Michael Bendis' run. My goodness, this was such a super issue. I know you haven't read it yet, Adam. Of course, as we always do, we'll keep it non-spoiler, so that's both for you and the listeners. I'm keeping this non-spoilery. But let me just say to anyone who has not read it yet, you have one of the most epic fights I've ever seen in store for you between Superman and Rogel Czar. This thing is a knockdown, drag-out fight. It gave me like vibes of like Superman fighting Doomsday. It is so epic. And then the other highlight of the issue for me is, so you know how like a lot of times Superman, he takes a lot of inspiration from, you know, being a son and the experiences he had with what Jonathan instilled in him. And there's a really cool twist in this issue where we see this really heartwarming flashback to him as a father to John, to Superboy. And so we see sort of the reverse of that with him taking inspiration and using an experience he had as a father as inspiration for how to handle a situation as Superman. So that was just absolutely super as well. And the variant cover for this issue, I have to say, I was reading Superman Homepage's review of this issue after I read it this morning, and they called it the best cover of the year. I'm not going to go quite that far. I would go with Jim Lee's cover for Action Comics number 1000, but this one is super high on my list as well. The cover for this issue is just tremendous. It is an Adam Hughes cover, and wow, I was pretty blown away by the variant cover for this issue. The main cover is great too, but the variant cover in particular. So anyway, that is my recommendation. Superman number 4, Bendis continues killing it, my super friend.
Awesome. I've been loving the series, so I will I definitely look forward to reading it.
And I look forward to hearing your thoughts when you do.
Well, I will definitely share them with you. One of my recommendation is maybe somewhat controversial. for whatever reason. I don't know why, but people are freaking out. But Nightwing number 50. I'm pretty sure it was 50. Let me double check the numbering real quick. Because I know, or was it 25 or was it 50? No, it was 50. Okay, yeah. Okay, so basically it's the fallout from what happened in Batman, the previous issue of Batman, I have to spoil something from Batman if you haven't read it, because I can't really give you anything about my review of Nightwing if I don't. So in last month's issue of Batman, or 2 weeks ago, I think it was, whatever the case may be, because of the release schedule, but Nightwing was shot in the head by KG Beast. So the Nightwing issue is essentially showing us the fallout of that issue, of that event. And so we have, you know, Nightwing survived, shockingly, and the shock is sarcastic, because I doubt they were going to kill off Nightwing. And so without spoiling too much, Nightwing has lost elements of his memory. And so he's sort of drifting and trying to refine his way. And all the while he has, you know, Batgirl trying to spur his memories of himself as Nightwing and all that stuff. And he's aware of it because people have told him about his exploits as Nightwing and, you know, Bruce and Batman and all that. So he's aware of all that stuff. He just doesn't have his own active recollection of it. And he's sort of, you know, trying to distance himself from that life. And so, you know, one of the things that he, one of the changes, well, his head is shaved. He's got a shaved head. And he doesn't want to go by the name of Dick anymore. So now he's calling himself Rick, which I guess makes sense because it's another short form of Richard. So it probably gets him into it'll prevent us from getting into a precarious situation when Jordan mentions the word Dick in the wrong context, like he's done the last couple episodes. So that name change for however long it sticks may work to get Jordan out of those hot spots. So yeah, it's just about him trying to forge, you know, a new place for himself in the world, given that he doesn't have an active memory of, you know, being Nightwing and living that life. And I've read people say, oh my God, you know, DC doesn't care about the Titans because look what they did to Nightwing, and then, you know, without spoiling anything, look what they've done to Wally West and Roy Harper. I don't buy that DC doesn't care about the Titans or the Teen Titans, considering that they have two books and a live-action TV show coming. I highly doubt the assertion that DC doesn't care about the Titans is accurate. And basically, what this is it's character progression and story progression. And that's okay. That's a good thing for characters. And besides, I'm going to venture a guess and say this memory loss or this, at some point it's going to work itself out. And I'm pretty confident that we'll see Nightwing again. And it will be Dick / Richard or / Rick, whatever he's calling himself now, Grayson, in the role. So, I'm intrigued to see where they go with this. And I think this kind of character progression and this, you know, shock to the status quo is good every once in a while. Otherwise, the books stay stagnant. So I'm going to buck the trends and highly recommend this. And the art is fantastic as well. So yeah.
Super. Well, moving into our news, I suppose. Let's travel to Gotham City first and talk about that. I think it was last episode that we talked about the casting of Huntress and Black Canary in Birds of Prey. And right. Now we have our Renee Montoya as well. And she is going to be played by Rosie Perez. I'm most familiar from Perez from her role as Choni on The Cleveland Show, which was a voice role.
Right.
I have seen her in live action as well, but that's what I'm most familiar with from her. And she was hilarious in that show. Wait to see what she brings to Montoya. How about you, Adam?
I find that she was chosen and she wasn't on that list from The Hollywood Reporter. Contrary to the Black Canary and Huntress choices who were firmly on that list, she came out of left field, if you will. And I like the choice. And what I like about it is that they're going with legit, again, and they've done this with the other two casting choices and, of course, Margot. They're going for legitimately talented actresses and not flavor of the week choices. That to me, and they're unexpected choices. And that to me is what's most intriguing. I mean, they could have gone the obvious route and had, let's appease the stereotypical fanboys for a second. They could have easily said, well, we want a singer for Black Canary and, she's going to be Caucasian or it's going to freak people out. So let's cast Taylor Swift, which I think would have been terrible, but it would have looked like the comics. So cool. They could have gone with the obvious choice of who everybody suggested. And I was championing. I wouldn't have been mad at this choice, but they could have gone with, what was that actress from, crap, what is her name? The one from Percy Jackson. The one that was in Baywatch with The Rock.
Oh, Alessandra.
Yeah, that's it. For whatever reason, I was blanking. Yeah, they could have gone with her because, everybody was suggesting over Huntress. But again, they did it. And so, like I said, they're going with off-the-beaten-path choices, but they're first and foremost legitimate actresses. And so I'm stoked. And I, like I said, the sooner this comes out, the better for me. and now I can't wait to see who they cast as Black Mask because Cassandra Cain. So,
absolutely.
So yeah, absolutely. But I'm 100% on board.
Yep. Totally with you, my super friend. Well, now we will travel. I was going to say we were traveling from Gotham City, but, there's probably going to be several Gotham City-based characters in this movie as well.
We're still sort of in Gotham City. Yeah.
I'll just say we will squad up now. There we go.
Yeah, there you go.
And talk about Suicide Squad 2, because we have some big news about that movie as well, which is that James Gunn is in talks to write the film and possibly direct it as well. And personally, I am very excited about this. Gunn wrote both of the Raja Gosnell Scooby-Doo movies, Scooby-Doo and Scooby-Doo 2 Monsters Unleashed, which I absolutely love. And so I'm very excited to see what he does with Suicide Squad 2. I was excited also to see what Gavin O'Connor and Todd Stashwick were going to do. It sounds like James Gunn is starting from scratch and that those guys are out. And that, because it says he's taking a new approach, so I think he's just going to start from scratch and do his own thing. But I am very, like I said, I like his previous work, and I'm very excited to see what he brings to Task Force X.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of Gunn, I love Guardians of the Galaxy 1. The first Guardians of the Galaxy, because it's not Carl, Guardians of the Galaxy 1. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, however, I was less keen on. It wasn't, I didn't hate it. To me, it was a downgrade. But aside from that, you know, I think James Gunn is in a unique position because if you look at some of his other work, he's also done, you know, like movies like Slither was one of them. Was an example. I think he can do, because a lot of people are saying, oh, this is just going to be DC turning Suicide Squad into their Guardians of the Galaxy. But again, if you look at Slither, it's not like Guardians of the Galaxy at all. So I think James Gunn can balance, you know, can do several different tones. He can be lighter, he can be darker. But I think if you're going to compare, see, to me, if you're gonna make those comparisons and say, well, you know, for Suicide Squad, it's DC's version of blank Marvel prop, insert Marvel property here. If you're going to do that with Suicide Squad, I think the better comparison would be, you know, Suicide Squad as a set of characters and as a concept is more along the lines of a Deadpool kind of character than it is Guardians of the Galaxy. And I think James Gunn, if you're going to go that route, could balance that act and bring some of that flavor. Not necessarily that he has to, but if he wanted to, he could. So it's not just, he doesn't fit into this cookie cutter mold of, oh, he can only do, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy and that's why they hired him. Or that's why they're in talks with him. So I don't think it's that at all. So I like him in terms of his previous work. I'm not going to get into the whole controversy with the 10-year-old tweets and all that crap. I'm going to judge him on his directorial talent, and he's got that in spades. One thing, the messaging here is confusing, and that is you've got some outlets, some Hollywood trades calling it a sequel. Some are saying it's not a sequel and that James Gunn is doing his own thing. Some are calling it a reboot, and some are questioning whether which members, if any, of the cast will return or if it'll be an entirely new cast. So that's a little bit confusing for me. Here's what I'll say. I'm intrigued to see new members on the team. You know, two or three that sort of pop out that I personally like, find interesting to see would be King Shark would be one of them.
He was almost in the first movie, right? And then they went with Croc instead.
Yeah, I'd like to see. I think Bronze Tiger could be interesting. I'd like to see Killer Frost for sure.
Well, fortunately for you, Adam, both Bronze Tiger and Killer Frost are going to be in the Arrowverse this year. I mean, we've seen them already in the Arrowverse.
Yeah, no,
but Bronze Tiger, we know, is coming back, and Killer Frost is going to have a big role in The Flash this year. So I just want to throw out there, whether they're in Suicide Squad 2 or not, I just want to throw out there, just because the Arrowverse is launching back up again, we're about to see both of those characters live action very soon.
No, but I'd like to see them make the jump to the big screen.
Absolutely. I'm with you. I just wanted to point that out.
So those two, and possibly the other option that I'm going to throw out there, because it is a squad of unsavory, quote-unquote, villains, I would throw Bane as a possibility. So those are some that I'd like to see.
Can I throw one out there?
Yeah, sure.
I would love to see Livewire on the team because I want some Superman representation on Task Force X.
I'd be down with that.
Yeah. So I think that because I'm not getting my Livewire fix on Supergirl anymore because they killed her off last season, I would love it if we got to see her in the DCEU on Task Force X.
Hypothetical. If, let's just say some of these trades are, one, let's say just for conversation's sake, that I'm going to use two different trades to sort of play devil's advocate. if it's a rotation of the if it's just a rotation of the roster, and let's say all our caution is keep Deadshot on the team and keep Hartley on the team, because those were two of the key factors in the success of the first Suicide Squad film. So that's number one. Number two, if this is a reboot in the actual reboot sense of the word, that is a little bit worrisome, because
it's not going to be a reboot.
Let me play devil's advocate. It's worrisome to me because, again, it goes back to what I just said. Two of the most popular components of what made the first one so successful are Deadshot, played by Will Smith, and Harley Quinn, played by Margot Robbie. So now, to hypothetically have another actor come in as Deadshot and another actress come in as Harley, while Margot Robbie is still actively playing Harley Quinn, is a mistake. So my messaging to Warner Brothers is, I wouldn't recommend doing the reboot, even though if it is that, obviously I'll be there, you know, and still watch it. But so I wouldn't recommend the reboot route, and I would strongly suggest that you keep two of the roster members you keep, no compromise, are Margot as Harley and Will Smith as Deadshot. So those are my cautioning thoughts. But in terms of James Gunn, I'm willing to see where it goes. I'm intrigued. I mean, the guy's got a proven track record, and he's got a versatility in terms of tones. So
yeah, I'm definitely with you on being excited about Gunn.
And by the way, David Ayer said that it is a bold, smart move by the studio, and that he thinks that James Gunn is the right man for the job. So
yeah,
that's a good endorsement from the previous.
Very good endorsement, because I love what Ayer did with the first movie. Yeah. So I'm glad that he's got Gunn's back now. I'm dead. Like I said, I'm very excited to see what Gunn brings to the film. And I'm just going to say it's not going to be a reboot, Adam. Don't worry, because I look at that quote, new approach. And like I was saying, all that means to me is that Gunn is starting from scratch and not following up on what O'Connor and Stashwick did. I really think that's all that means, Adam. But I guess now we can move and go to Superman's Doom Planet. Before it was, well, it was still doomed at this point, but
nobody knew it was doomed yet.
Yeah. Well, some of the characters
actually sort of did because they've been told.
But yes, and let's talk about the casting and the subsequent image we got of Lobo on Krypton. Now, we had found out, I think, at SDCC this year that Lobo was going to be the big bad of season two.
That's right.
And now we have the actor portraying him. And we have our first image, and the actor portraying him is Emmett J. Scanlon, who was Jim Corrigan on Constantine. And I am so thrilled. I loved him as Jim Corrigan on Constantine, and I'm so thrilled that, you know, it's very unfortunate that we never got the payoff of him as the Spectre on Constantine, because it was canceled prematurely. But I'm so excited that he's getting another chance to return to the DC Universe now as Lobo. And in terms of the image, wow, this is like exactly what I would have imagined Lobo in live action, finally seeing him in live action, would look like. Like, it looks so cool. I think it does fit the aesthetic of the show of Krypton that they've already set up. And man, I mean, the main man just looks super in this image. Just exactly what I sort of had in my mind as what Lobo would look like in live action. So I'm thrilled about this casting and this picture. How about you, my super friend?
Like you, I only really know the actor from his stint on Constantine, mm-hmm. and I enjoyed him there. So I'm on board. But again, I've said it. Whether it be the CW side of DC's casting, and then I'll extend it to Krypton side of DC's casting, and even I'll go further. So far on paper, I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but on paper, the DC Universe streaming service casting.
And don't forget Gotham.
Yeah, right. All of it's been, you know, solid. So I'm not, you know, I'm not even going to question it in terms of the casting aspect. In terms of the visual, I mean, he looks exactly like Lobo right off the page.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it's following the cues of what Krypton's done for Brainiac and for Doomsday in capturing the comic book aesthetic. So picture perfect. I don't know if that. I don't know if that skull ornament that's covering his crotch is a metaphor telling Ghost Rider to suck it or not. I'm not sure, but it's interesting. But yeah, he looks spot on. I think it looks great, and I can't, again, season one of Krypton to me was phenomenal, so I can't wait for season two, and this edition just makes it all the more exciting.
Amen to that, my super friend. I'm 100% with you. Well, moving on to the DC Universe digital service, we have some more casting for Doom Patrol, which is that former Superman, Matt Bomer, it has been cast as Negative Man on Doom Patrol. Now, much like the Brendan Fraser casting as Robot Man, there had already been somebody cast as Negative Man on Titans, which is interesting. I wonder if it... I remember you mentioning when I brought this up with regards to Brendan Fraser that they were doing some reshoots on the Doom Patrol episode of Titans. So maybe they're doing the same... Maybe that's involved with this, like you were speculating, and that Matt Bomer's going to wind up playing him in that Titans episode as well. Or maybe this is just simply a recast. But in any case, Matt Bomer is going to be playing the character, his voice anyway, the actual person in the, you know, the bandages, because you can't really see his face or anything, is going to be Matthew Zuck. But Matt Bomer is going to be playing the voice anyway of Negative Man. And I am so excited about this because I loved him as Superman in Superman Unbound. I thought he was great as the voice of Superman. So seeing him, I mean, yes, it's sort of a live action role, sort of a voice role here. But seeing him in another role in the DC Universe, turning the DC Universe, has me super excited. So what are your thoughts on this, my super friend?
Well, yeah, like you, I really liked Matthew Bomer's vocal work as Superman in Superman Unbound. It's actually one of my favorite Superman animated films.
Yeah, mine too. Yeah.
So, and then, you know, I've seen him in some of my action stuff, and I've liked him there too. So I think he's a good addition. And it's funny because a lot of people for years wanted him to play a live action Superman. So he is coming into the DC Universe just, you know, again, but just not in the role that many people wanted, but that's okay. Yeah, so I'm on board with this. I think he's a solid actor, and yeah, I know he can do. He's got a good voice for these kind of things. So, yeah, glad to have him as part of the team.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, here's a transition for you. With that, moving from one show that Alan Tudyk's going to be on, because Alan Tudyk is going to be on Doom Patrol.
Right.
Now we know that he's going to be on Harley Quinn as well, also on the DC Universe digital service, of course. And we have not just him, but we have a bunch of casting announcements for Harley Quinn, as well as a little promotional video that they put together for us. So the casting, we've got Kaley Cuoco as Harley. And so this is kind of funny because we had one Bay Area actress play Harley in Batman and Harley Quinn last year with Melissa Rauch, and now we're getting a different Big Bang Theory actress playing Harley on the Harley Quinn animated series. Cuoco, I think the thing I'm most familiar with her from is she's in the movie Why Him in just a voice role. She plays like this in James Franco's character's house. She's like this speaker thing that's like always like, she's like Siri basically in his house. It's hilarious. So that's a voice role for her that I'm familiar with. I love what we're hearing from her so far in this trailer. But also, we've got Lake Bell is Poison Ivy, and I'm loving what we're hearing from her in the trailer as well. Alan Tudyk in an undisclosed role, but this is his third DC Universe stint, fourth if you count Doom Patrol, because I guess Doom Patrol is coming out before this, so I guess fourth after Doom Patrol, because he was Green Arrow on Young Justice, and I loved him on there. Then he was on Powerless as Van Wayne, and I thought he was one of the funniest parts of that show. And then he's going to be Mr. Nobody on Doom Patrol, and now he's going to be on Harley Quinn as well. So that's very exciting. Ron Funches, who was also on Powerless, is going to be on the show, and I thought he was hilarious on Powerless as well. And we've also got J.B. Smoove, Jason Alexander, Wanda Sykes, Giancarlo Esposito, Natalie Morales, Jim Rash, Tony Hale, who did a phenomenal job as the Joker in Batman Ninja, Chris Maloney, who, of course, was Colonel Hardy in Man of Steel and was super in that role, and Diedrich Bader as Batman, who we actually hear, we see him in the trailer, and the fact that he's reprising his role I think is perfect because his Batman, I think, really fits the tone that they're going for in this show. So I think for Batman in this show particularly, he's like the perfect choice. And speaking about that tone, getting into the little teaser we got, I am loving it. I think it looks hilarious. They're doing like a sort of a fourth wall breaking tone here that's very similar, I think, to the Jimmy Palmiotti, Amanda Connor comics. That's sort of what I was predicting they were going to take some inspiration from, and it looks like that's going to be the case here. So they're breaking the fourth wall, a lot of jokes. It looks like it's going to be really funny. And so this trailer cracked me up. And this voice cast is absolutely super, in my opinion. So, what are your thoughts on this, my super friend?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'm familiar with Kaley Cuoco because obviously Big Bang Theory and before that, Eight Simple Rules. And so I've seen her in things. And so, but just her voice, I mean, there were moments where I could tell it was her, but there were moments that it was different. And so, but what I applaud from the little sampling that we got of her as Harley is that she's not trying to sort of mimic or just, you know, follow the stereotypical Harley voice. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So she's trying to do her own thing with it. So I dig that. I obviously Diedrich Bader as Batman. I loved him in Brave and the Bold, so it's nice to have him back.
And JLA Adventures Trapped in Time.
Yeah. So I loved him in those, and it's nice to have him back beneath the cowl, if you will, sort of. Given that it's a voiceover, and he's not actually wearing a cowl, or maybe
he maybe he is.
Yeah, maybe he goes into the recording booth with a cowl. I don't know, which would be cool. I love that aspect of it. You know, a lot of
have you seen that image of Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman with the bat cowl on?
I have, yeah. It's
that's just what I'm picturing is Diedrich Bader in the booth.
It's an interesting image. But I know most of the names on the casting list, you know, the cast list, I should say, are familiar to me, and it's a stacked lineup. So I like the way that's shaping up. I'd be interested to see who exactly the rest of some of these people are playing, because I don't think not all of them were revealed as who's who.
No, I think just
Poison Ivy,
Lake
Harley,
Bell, and Diedrich Bader, because they were in the trailer.
In terms of the trailer, you know your observation of the tone being similar to the Jimmy Palmiotti, Amanda Connor run on the comic is very true and. And I liked it. I liked the humor. I liked the fourth wall breaking. I liked, you know, Poison Ivy being very very spot on in terms of fandom when she tells Harley that the fans are going to hate it because they hate everything, which is kind of funny because a lot of fans online do. And then when they're poking fun at the whole dark and gritty aspect that DC's become associated with, you know, and Harley's like, it's a great way to make television and film, but my show is going to be this and this. That was a funny bit of dialogue. And then you know, the way Batman just popped in and was so matter of fact and to the point was, I'm like, all right, that works. And the animation, I really, really like the look of this little teaser from an animation standpoint. So I am totally 100%. And I should say, the best part was when they made fun of Deadpool, because they said, unlike the Deadpool animated show, this one's actually happening. That was funny, because after months and months of seeing, you know, Ryan Reynolds take shots at DC, it's nice that some other DC properties are giving it right back to him. So it's great marketing. So, yeah, I like this. I like it. And again, looking forward to seeing it.
Yes. Well, I think we are both all in for Harley Quinn.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And now we know when we're going to be seeing it, my super friend, because at New York Comic Con, they released the schedule for the DC Universe original series. Now, we already knew that Titans was coming this Friday as of us recording this. So how exciting is that?
Mm-hmm.
But, the first episode of Titans coming out this Friday. So that's going to start on Friday, and it is going to run through the end of December, at which point they are going to start airing the first half of the season of Young Justice Outsiders. And that's going to run until early February. At that point, that's going to take a break, and they're going to drop all of Doom Patrol throughout the spring. Then once Doom Patrol ends, Swamp Thing is going to pick up, and that's going to sort of be the summer show, it looks like. And that's sort of going to run, and Young Justice Outsiders, the second half of the season, is going to run during part of the time that Swamp Thing is airing. Then as Swamp Thing is finishing up, it looks like Stargirl is going to start in the fall. And then Stargirl, about midway through its run, Harley Quinn is starting up in mid-October of 2019 and running through the beginning of 2020. So DC Universe is sticking to their promise to give us original programming, it looks like, every week of the year. It looks like there are a couple week gaps in here where there's a little gap between the shows. But other than that, it looks like the shows are running. We're going to get a new episode of one of the shows, and for certain periods of time, two of the shows, because like I said, Young Justice Outsiders and Swamp Thing are airing at the same time. It looks like maybe for 1 week, Swamp Thing and Stargirl are going to both have an episode the same week, and then Harley Quinn is going to be airing during the second half of Stargirl's run. So we're going to begin, and then it's going to continue on after that. But yes, wow, we finally have dates for these shows, not specific dates, but at least general ideas of when to expect, other than Titans, when to expect the rest of these shows. And my goodness, is this exciting, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it looks like it's going to be a constant stream of, you know, no pun intended, a constant stream of new content, and that's exciting. I know what I will be watching when I'll be watching it, presumably on Netflix until the DC streaming service comes here. But as long as I get it, I don't care where I get it. So yeah, it's exciting times for sure.
Absolutely, my super friend.
And well, wouldn't it be worth noting? Did we notice last week? I can't remember that Titans has already been given a season 2 renewal.
Oh, we did not talk about that. Yes, let's mention that Titans is back for season 2, because that was another thing they announced at New York Comic Con. So yes, Titans will be back for season two before it's even aired. It's already been renewed. How exciting is that?
No, it's phenomenal. And I think, you know, nothing was confirmed in terms of this part of it, but I think that pretty much is going to guarantee that we see Superboy. It's just my thing.
Yes. Yes.
There's that.
Kyle, oh, baby.
And,
yes.
And one thing that was confirmed is that Geoff Johns said, and this was his quote, it'd be stupid at some point not to do an adaptation of the Judas Contract and to bring in Deathstroke. But he did say that it would be a new Deathstroke. It wouldn't be the Manu Bennett or the Joe Manganiello version. So, Jordan, it looks like your theory of connecting to the CW-verse for Titans is...
Well, it could still be on a different Earth in the Arrowverse.
Probably not.
But yeah. You're right. It does look like there won't be a crossover with Manu Bennett's death, and I'm sure they'll get another super actor to play Deathstroke, because it's already been, I mean, I love what we got of Manganiello at the end of Justice League, so I'm very confident the mantle after that will be a new, and I loved Don Slovin as well, I gotta throw that in there too, but yeah, very, very exciting. I can't wait, I cannot wait, especially for Superboy. Hopefully they do get to the Judas Contract too. I mean, just so much to look forward to in the future with Titans, and now not just going into season one, knowing there's going to be a season two already, that just makes me so happy. So,
and that's the benefit of streaming, is that once, you know, you're not sitting on pins and needles week to week wondering how the ratings are doing.
Because that's very true.
It's measured differently. So, plus that influx of money from Netflix internationally that they got was probably a good...
That's a good point. That is a good point as well.
A good swaying point. So I think, like I said, for international audiences, that the Netflix idea or the Netflix principle makes a lot of sense, because it can give the streaming service extra cash flow while they're still trying to find their footing and growing. So I think that's it's a smart move. And like I said, as long as I am able to get the content, whichever way Warner Brothers chooses to dispense it to me, it is fine by me.
Well, one more thing to thank Netflix for as DC fans, after they saved Lucifer, yeah. And now they're putting out Titans.
And plus, let's be honest, I look at the list of stuff that's on DC Universe, and I have about 99.8% of it. So at this point, I don't feel like I'm missing anything.
Same here. You know, as diehard DC fans, I feel like a lot of the people like us who are subscribing to this have so much of this content already,
yeah.
But it's still great to have one place to watch it all together. And there's certain things like Batman Animated Series in HD, where right now this is not going to be the case soon, because it's hitting Blu-ray soon, but for now it's the only place to get at least the first two seasons of Batman Animated Series in HD. Wow. So there, and DC Daily, that's been the other big thing for me, is DC Daily, basically, so they transitioned from DC All Access to DC Daily now, and you can get part of it on YouTube and Facebook if you don't have DC Universe, but
which is what I've been doing, because they give you the, you know, the most important news bits are on that that truncated version. So
It's basically they do these panel reviews of different DC content, and that's the part that's exclusive to DC Universe.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that I've really been taking advantage of on DC Universe is DC Daily, of course.
And besides, I'll be double dipping and getting, I mean, this is no secret, or anybody that knows me, this is no secret. I'll be double dipping and getting the Blu-rays of Batman the Animated Series. I usually don't double dip. Screw it. It's Batman the Animated Series, and my wallet can scream at me later.
Well, I'll be, because I'm as you know, I'm a digital person now. I've gone completely digital.
Yeah.
So I will.
Oh, you're not physical. You don't have a physical body anymore. It's good to know. You're all digital. You're like Gideon.
Yes.
That's good.
Or like Tess Mercer in the Smallville season 11 comics, to bring it back to Smallville again, like I always do. But basically, I'll be getting them in HD as well on Amazon Video once they drop there. So, Yeah, I'll be double dipping as well. Yeah. But anyway, now let's move from the DC Universe Digital Service to the DCCW, where we have our first look at Ruby Rose as Batwoman. And my goodness, is this image super. She looks absolutely super in the role. Her cowl reminds me a lot of the Dark Knight Rises Batman cowl, which I think is awesome. I just, they've got her pose with like her cape in the background, which is just the way they've got her pose there is awesome. Because the Batwoman suit looks has a lot of similarities to the Batman Beyond suit, one thing I'll mention about this is it makes me even more hyped for us to eventually see the Batman Beyond suit in live action, because seeing this just makes me think about how cool that's eventually going to look in live action. But, I mean, this image, absolutely super. We've got the Bat Signal in the background. We've got Wayne Industries in the background. It looks just like I was saying about Lobo, just like I said about Robin on Titans earlier. It looks exactly how I'd want a live action Batwoman to look, and wow.
Yeah, for me, I'm just gonna say, I'll say it, holy shit. That was my actual reaction when I saw it, because I was at a my friend Dave's house, who we were ironing out some details for the physical print copies of our comic books. So we were doing all that stuff, and as we're wont to do while we're supposed to be productive, we scour the internet for any news, and sure enough, that was the image and that was my first reaction, and I showed him, and he was like, "Oh crap, that's awesome," I've been championing from the beginning when they cast Ruby Rose. I said she's going to be great, and so just on look alone, I mean, in my opinion, this is the most spot on rendition of a superhero costume from the comics on the CW network. For me, it's just incredible.
You're saying it's your favorite, or it's the most comic accurate?
Both.
Okay.
In
terms of comic accuracy, I'd have to think about it. I'd probably agree with you. In terms of my favorite, that would be Tyler Hoechlin's Superman suit. But
That I like that suit, but I still, the clasps give me some pause.
Really? Oh, I love those.
But
they look cool.
But either way, it blew me away how not only A, awesome it looked, and how comic accurate it looked. Mm-hmm. It just blew me away. Like you said, like the background, Gotham City in the background, and the Wayne Enterprises building, and you can see the logo and the Bat Signal, all that. I'm like, I've championed for years since probably Birds of Prey left the air, a Batman related series on the CW, on the WB/CW. And now to see that I'm getting my wish, and I'm still going to say, cause I feel so certain about it.
Don't forget that the Batman was a Batman related series.
Right.
On the CW.
But I'm talking about live action, obviously. But I'm fairly certain that it's just a matter of getting things done. But I think that the Batwoman solo series is a certainty, and until I'm told otherwise, then I'll believe it. But I think it's pretty much a guarantee.
Certainly
even,
hope so.
Even if one of the shows have to go, I'll sacrifice it for the Batwoman show. I can't wait, because I think. From a visual aesthetic, just based on the image, the background image, and the costume itself, and Ruby in the role. I think this has the chance to be something uniquely special. And bring on her debut in the crossover, bring on the solo series. Like I'm. Have you read any of the Batwoman comic books, Jordan?
I have read her in other series. Like I've read her when she shows up, like in Detective Comics. Okay. But I have not read her solo stuff.
Do you know that she is paired with, in terms of not paired romantically, but in terms of like a sort of a partnership with Alfred's daughter, who sort of, you know, is her Alfred in terms of being her tech and her surveillance, sort of.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, I'm curious to know if that's something they'll port over to the eventual series. I think that would be fascinating, like, to have, you know, that connection from the comics, but also to Alfred without being actual Alfred. Right? You know what I'm saying? So,
mm-hmm.
All that stuff fascinates me, and the who, you know, what ifs and who would be part of the cast, and so all that stuff is fascinating. Like, to me, just like, let's get on. Like, I hate saying I wish I could fast forward, but that click button, you know, the click remote from that movie, from the movie Click, could really come in handy right now, because I just wish the crossover was here and I could watch it already. And look,
Then you'd miss Titans and
no, I understand. I understand it's a catch 22 kind of thing, but I'm so damn excited about this. But
you can't click over Titans, Adam.
No, I watched Titans and then fast forward. How about that?
Well, Titans is coming out weekly, so you can't.
Yeah, but it might be done by the time the crossovers.
I'm trying to think. Well, let me go back to the schedule and see.
How about this?
I guess it doesn't really matter, because the point is we don't have a clue.
How about this?
Titans won't be over by the time.
How about this? I'll fast forward everything but Titans. And then,
what about all the comics you'd be missing? And
it's time travel. I'm sure Barry can help me out.
And all the Arrowverse shows episodes before the crossover.
I could. There's time travel. There's ways around. Who knows? It's like, the cool thing is I've enjoyed every single crossover to varying degrees so far that they've done, except for the music one. That was terrible, in my opinion.
You didn't like the musical?
I don't like musicals, so that's probably part of the issue.
Do you like Mayhem of the Music Meister from Batman the Brave and the Bold?
No. I also don't like, I'll put it in context. I've said on the show that I'm a big Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan. I love that show. But they did a musical and I hated it. So
I'm not a musical person either, unless it's DC, which case I do love it.
I just don't like musicals, so maybe that's just me. But anyway, with the exception of that, I've loved every crossover, especially Crisis on Earth X. But I think just sight unseen, just on what we know, the idea that we have Batwoman, that we have Superman, that we have Lois Lane, that we have, you know, all this stuff, this, if the stars align, has the potential to be my favorite yet. So just because of all those ingredients. So
just by having Superman I think like that it would be almost impossible for it not to be my favorite.
It's the having the Batman representation via Batwoman and her introduction, but also Superman that give it a very strong chance of again, provided the episodes are live up to the billing of superseding even Crisis on Earth X on my list.
Hey, yeah. Well, yeah, I can't wait either. And I mean, this image, I mean, just like, I was already so pumped, but like, wow. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, moving on, let's take a trip to Atlanta, friend, and talk about something else that got me even more excited for something than I thought I could be before, which is the Aquaman. I think they're calling it the exclusive first look. They're not actually technically calling it a trailer. But my goodness, we got 5 minutes of New Aquaman, which over 5 minutes, technically, actually, slightly over 5 minutes. And, like, wow. We are, I was just blown away by this footage. First thing I'll mention, Adam, is I continue to just get such a kick out of Aquaman and Manta's banter. Like, I think that's going to be, like, just a real highlight of the movie, just some hilarious stuff there. Like, some of the looks she gives him just crack me up when he jokes about he could have just peed on the machine thing, and she just gives him this hilarious look. And, like, the whole thing, we heard this in the other trailer, but you do some of your best thinking when you're not thinking at all. Like, that was hilarious. And, like, the whole thing when she's, like, when he's, like, when she crushes the thing and she's, like, didn't you memorize it? I memorized. And he's, like, she's, like, what did it say? And he has no idea.
Yeah, it's, like, something.
That whole banter is just cracking me up. Yeah. The action in this, man, I just, when Black Manta shows, I was watching this in a public place the first time I saw it, and I nearly screamed when Black Manta showed up, and he's got his jets going, and he jumps over and stands right in front of Aquaman and Mera, and then it leads into that whole action scene that we saw part of in that first trailer. I mean, absolutely epic. We even see Chase Meridian getting in on some of the action. So how about that? I mean, and it just looks so epic. Oh my goodness, there's this other action scene between Arthur and Orm where they're in these, like, armored suits that looks epic. So the two money shots for me were Black Manta showing up and then Aquaman at the end when he's in the classic suit. Like, I just, oh my goodness. When he asks Mera, he's like, what could be more than a king? And she says, a hero. And he shows up in that classic suit. I mean, oh my goodness. It just looked absolutely super. What are your feelings towards this exclusive first look, as they're calling it, my super friend?
Yeah, I mean, it was fantastic. I think that like you were saying, you touched on the banter between Mera and Arthur, and. What I love about that is that, yeah, you know, there's humor, but never once did it feel forced to me, which is good. And I can't say the same for, you know, Thor: The Dark World and stuff like that, or Ragnarok or whatever. But I love that the interaction, the banter, and the humor was enforced. The hologram of the Atlantean King was cool too, but mm-hmm. the whole opening aspect of it when they're searching for that device and sort of the vistas that they're traveling to, you know, to find it in the desert and all that.
And Aquaman's other line there, when Mera's like, I think we're getting close, and he's like, to what, dying of thirst? Another example of the hilarious banter.
But it reminded me, it had a very much Indiana Jones-ish kind of feel to it, which is one of my favorite movie series that's not superhero related. So I like that aspect of it. Of course, the more we see the underwater stuff,
Did you see that giant sea turtle thing? That was like the new shot from the new shot from Atlantis. So I was so blown away by Atlantis in the first trailer, but in terms of in terms of the new stuff in Atlantis, that giant sea turtle thing was like the thing that I was like, whoa, that is so cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. But I'm continually amazed at just like the look of Atlantis and how it looks like just flawless in terms of like it, I know that it's CGI because otherwise most of our actors would be dead of drowning if they actually filmed underwater to that degree. But it looks flawless to me. And then you mentioned, Nicole Kidman as Queen Atlanta, right?
Chase Meridian.
Yeah. The cool thing was there was a shot where she's fighting off attackers.
Uh-huh. That's the one I was referring to in the action.
It mirrored Aquaman's fighting to a certain degree, Like there was a little bit of cohesion between, and so it's like, well, he got that from his mama, right? That's the same, you know.
Yeah, like mother, like son. Yeah,
right, yeah. So that was a cool parallel. The you know, we got to see a little glimpse of what is his name? Dolph Lundgren. Who I will forever know as He-Man, as you know, the King of Zebul, right?
Hey, well, don't forget, he's at DC cred. He was on Arrow.
Yeah, it doesn't matter for me. He'll always
as Constantine Kovar.
For me, he'll always be He-Man. That's just the era I grew up in, and that's who he'll be. So we got a you know a look at him for the first time. There were two shots that really impressed me. The stuff with Black Manta, because it was like I don't know if you noticed, it seemed like one continuous shot. Like you know, when Mera was being chased and she was running. You know,
oh yeah, over the tops of the buildings.
That
yeah.
One continuous shot. That's a trademark of James Wan. And
you know what I thought during that. Mm. She's running on rooftops.
Yeah, Batman Begins. Yeah,
like from Batman Begins. Yeah.
but just the way that visual looked and it just looks like incredible, like the heart racing action. You know, you'd see in it almost was like old school kind of action filmmaking, if you will. And so I love that. But so that was one of the moments. And Manta looks.
Aquaman loved it too, because then once he and Mera crash in there, and he goes, "That was awesome."
Yeah, but
that was my reaction.
Yeah,
too.
No, it's true. I think that was most people's reaction. But and then you know the part where I just again it reaffirms that Manta is one badass villain, and look wise, and I think. If everything comes together, he could be, in terms of cinematically, he could become one of the top tier villains if everything because look wise he's already there, and so then it becomes well.
You know. I mean, he's got out of all villains in comics, he's got one of the coolest looks, and like they have just translated that so perfectly into live action.
And I wouldn't be surprised if George Lucas took some inspiration from Manta for Darth Vader. It wouldn't shock me at all. But the last shot of Arthur in the classic Aquaman costume
and stabbing down the trident, yep,
was just outstanding because
it was outrageous.
Yeah, I'm not gonna go there. To be honest with you, I never thought we'd ever see that on that level. So accurately translated from comic to film. I never thought, in the back of my head, I'm like, there's no way, you know, for years, because Aquaman's been portrayed as the butt of the joke, for years, there's no way they can do that in live action. That close and make it look good. And here we are, and they did it, and it looks phenomenal. It's just on that one shot alone, it's right up there with Superman's costume, Batman's main BVS costume, and Wonder Woman as, you know, looking amazing and almost flawless. So, I mean, again.
I'd throw Ezra Miller's Flash suit up there, too, personally, because I love that suit.
I like the suit, but it doesn't wow me as much as the other ones I mentioned.
Superman's definitely the best, but I would put Ezra Miller's Flash up in that upper echelon of DCEU suits as well. But anyway, yes, I'm totally with you on Aquaman being an upper echelon.
But too. So, yeah, I mean, this 72 days or whatever it is that we're away,
yep.
Need to you know, go tumbling by rather quickly because, yeah, it's going to be one hell of a Christmas.
Oh, yes.
Watching
that. Oh, yes. I mean, and just like 10 days after Elseworlds ends is when Aquaman hits. So, I mean, think about that back to back. Like, wow.
You know, I've come to the conclusion that I'm going to be broke more than normal this Christmas because think about it. We've got Aquaman, which I'm seeing first no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got Into the Spider-Verse, which I'm seeing. Then I've got Bumblebee, which I'm seeing because I like Transformers, but also because Christina Hodson wrote it, and she wrote Birds of Prey and is writing Batgirl. So, yeah, I'm going to be broke. I just want to put that out there.
So, the only one of those movies I plan on seeing is Aquaman, but I'll probably see Aquaman so many times that I'll wind up being broke, too.
So if anybody wants money from me around that time, you're shit out of luck. Because I'm one of them. So yeah, I'm. Yeah, like I said, I was already, you know, super excited for this film, and it's just gone through the roof.
Oh, absolutely! I am totally right there with you, my super friend. And one other shot that I'll mention because I forgot to mention when I was talking about it, and you didn't mention it either, so I'll throw it in right now.
Yeah,
is. We get the moment right before the permission to come aboard moment from the first trailer, which I think is so cool. We get the moment right before that where he lands on top and then right before he drops in. So that was cool.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. This movie, I am super excited for this. I just, and like, yeah, like you were saying, I was already super excited and my excitement level has just, like, if my excitement level was at, like, an 11 before, now it's at, like, a 12. Because, like, wow. Awesome. Yeah.
All
righty. Well, I guess it's time to move into our Batman Animated Series review. So we will go now from Atlantis back to Gotham City, where we were earlier this episode. and we will talk about It's Never Too Late, which I personally think is one of the absolute most underrated episodes of Batman Animated Series. Like, I do not know why this does not show up in more top 10 lists. It is, for me, it's one of the top, it doesn't quite rank this high if we include the new Batman Adventures as well, but if we're just including the original run of Batman Animated Series, I think it's one of the top 5 episodes. I love this episode, and here's our IMDb description. Do you think it's going to be one sentence?
No way, it's more than one sentence.
You got it. Batman intervenes in a gang war and tries to convince the older of two rival bosses to change his ways. Succinct,
yeah,
but accurate.
That's fair.
Directed
totally
by
leaves out the, totally leaves out the drug aspect of it, but it's all right.
Totally what?
Leaves out like the drug aspect and the part with the sun, but it's all right.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's part, that is all tied in with Batman convincing, trying to convince him to change his ways. So, yeah. And then, directed by Boyd Kirkland and written the story by Tom Ruegger and the teleplay by Garen Wolf. And wow, did they deliver here because, man, I absolutely love this episode, my super friend.
Mm-hmm.
I love Batman episodes. Batman Animated Series episodes, because there's a lot of them that do this, that really deal with this is one of the things I think Batman Animated Series did really well, was dealing with the mob aspects of Gotham City, particularly with Rupert Thorne. I mean, because they didn't use Maroni and Falcone on Batman Animated Series.
These were essentially the Maroni and Falcone.
Yeah, Rupert Thorne and Arnold Tromwell. And I think this episode, I mean, we saw Rupert Thorne had some great stuff in the Two-Face two-parter, and then here, also in this episode, and that's just something I love about the Batman mythology, is I've always loved Batman stories that deal with the organized crime in Gotham City, stories like Year One, stories like The Long Halloween, movies like Batman Begins. There was even an episode of Just League Action that had Falcone voiced by Superman, Jason J. Lewis, who he played Superman on Justice League Action. He also voiced Falcone, which I think is kind of cool. But anyway, I've always loved Batman stories like that, and this is certainly an example of this. And I think it's such an emotion-filled story. And what I love about this episode is it's Batman trying to solve a problem with – he's solving a problem with his heart rather than his fists. And he's using his he's trying to convince a criminal to do the right thing in this situation. And like, it's so emotional, and I think they really deal with some, just like how the Two-Face two-parter deals with dissociative identity disorder, this one deals with PTSD with Stromwell, and I think they do a great job with that. Some really powerful stuff, like that is really tense, emotion-filled scenes with, you know, him having the flashbacks when he gets with all the train track scenes, and I think that's really emotion-filled stuff. There's also some, I always like to point out the Bullock moments, because I just think Batman Animated Series' version of Bullock is just so funny. And so he has a couple hilarious moments where after the restaurant gets blown up, when he's like, man, they had the best cannolis. Yeah. And Gordon just doesn't even have any response to that. Gordon's like completely down to business, but that's the first thing that pops into Bullock's mind, which I just think is so funny. But especially the emotion here with Stromwell and, you know, Batman going to take him to see his son. I mean, dealing with some really serious stuff in this episode that I think that they really just did a phenomenal job of exploring.
Yeah, I mean, one of the, you know, I guess it continues a DC tradition, if you will, of handling the issue of drug and substance abuse, because, you know, the Green Arrow, and there was a time where, you know, Green Arrow and Green Lantern had a team-up book, and that's where they spend an issue on dealing with drug use and drug abuse and addiction.
I mean, Roy Harper.
Right,
yeah.
So this episode continues that tradition, but what's fascinating about it is that it's done in a animated series, which typically would be off limits. You know, most of them won't touch that subject, right? But it's and this was almost like it was a well thought out, well written sort of. It's a way of doing like a PSA, you know, don't do drugs kind of thing. Without making it a cheesy PSA ad saying don't do drugs, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I got you.
So that was kind of, I mean, that was kind of interesting the way they pulled that off. But again, to do it in an animated series that it was accessible to kids, even though it was more adult, but it was accessible to kids, I thought was intriguing. you touched on the mob aspect. And that's something that DC's done, or this series rather, has done rather well, and they continue it here. This felt like there are certain scenes here that feel like they could be placed in a Godfather film, or that come right out of a Godfather film, which to me is perfectly fine because and it's cool because another one of my, you know, favorite film series that's not superhero related is The Godfather. So anytime you want to draw from that, it's a welcome. And you know, the setup, the whole setup of, you know, trying to lure him there for the meeting and having the explosive planted, and, you know, like I said, it's as if I was watching the Godfather, but in animated form for those segments. Also, at the beginning, it's worth noting that we see Batman via one of his disguises doing some, you know, detective work.
When he plants the listening device.
Yeah. And I've always said that I love one of the things I love about Batman the animated series is they really go out of their way to emphasize the detective aspect of Batman. And that continues here. The flashbacks to the two brothers, you know, and the whole train incident and all that stuff. The way they were shot, you know, with the sort of the haze and the glow was kind of was very unique, I thought. And at the time, it was stuff you didn't really see in animation. So it stands out for that as well. And the other thing is the dichotomy of having one brother that's a mob boss and the other one who's a priest is unique. And there, again, to comment on the animation, the Batman standing on the roof of a church is a pretty iconic imagery that's rendered amazingly here. Also, side note, we had a priest at my church years ago that kind of looked like a live action version of the priest from the show, which is kind of funny. but yeah, I mean, so to me, I'm with you. This episode doesn't get enough credit for all the amazing things that it does. I think it's one of my top, I don't know if it'll crack the top 10 or top 5, but it's top tier for me, for sure. I loved it. Yeah. So
cool, cool.
Those are my thoughts. Anything you want to add before we give this thing a grade?
Not at the top of my head. No, just an absolutely super episode that I love.
All right then. So go ahead and give us your rating.
Yeah, it's an A for me.
Awesome. I'm gonna go ahead and go one step higher than you. I think it's gonna get an A plus for me. Because there's not one single thing that I can find that I could take off a point for. And they mentioned cannolis, which makes me hungry. I like cannolis. So it's a bonus point for that.
It's a real bummer for you then, too, that place got blown up. Because according to Bullock, they had the best cannolis in Gotham.
Good thing for me is, though, I have a couple of bakeries that make pretty damn good cannolis. So I can go there anytime and eat cannolis. So it's all good. But yeah, it's a great episode. Definitely recommend it if you haven't watched it or if you've seen it, but haven't seen it in a while. Definitely go back and revisit it. It's worth your 22 minutes and change to sit down and check out. But that pretty much brings this episode to a close.
Indeed, it does, my super friend.
We want to remind you that we are part, and we've done a substantial amount of Batman-related talk tonight, but if you have a urge to listen to more Batman-related podcasting, then it behooves you to know that we are part of the Batman Podcast Network, hosted by the folks over at Batman on Film. So if you go there, you can find a whole host of other Batman-related podcasts that we can tide you over until our next episode.
I just thought of this. I was going to mention it earlier, but I forgot to. When you were saying bring on Batwoman, it made me think of the because we were just talking about the WB/CW as a network earlier. They used to do these promos for the Batman, and it just has always stuck out in my mind. They would say, "Bring on the Batman at 10 a.m. or whatever they would say. Cool. It was at 10 a.m. for a little while, but. Anyway, it just made me think. It made me think. I don't know if you remember those promos.
I do remember seeing a few of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So anyway, it just made me think of that. We could say now. Bring on the Batwoman.
Yeah, we can. Maybe they'll use that for the series. Probably not, but you never know.
It would be a cool nod to their previous marketing. So
yeah, it could be. So check out the Batman Podcast Network for other bat related podcast, and then in terms of finding us and interacting with us away from this podcast, we'll tell you where you can do that. So Jordan, where can we hook up with you and talk DC?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you can find me on Twitter at SmallvilleFanJV. And on most other social media, including the DC All Access app and the DC Universe Digital Service, at Jordan from Smallville. Always happy to talk DC. And I also want us to listen to my iTunes reviews. So if you like what you hear from us, or if you don't, well, it would help us out if you left us an iTunes review, and we'd really appreciate it. Thank you in advance.
Yeah, and if you want to talk to me, you can do it in a couple of ways. You can either go to the Multiverse Musings EDC Comics Podcast Facebook page, and we can interact there. Right? If you send a request, we will add you, and then we can chat there. Or if you want to find me on Twitter, you can, at Superhero Sci-Fi, and we will talk DC or whatever you want to ask me about. You can talk about that, too, over there. So look forward to hearing from you. And until next time, that brings this episode to a close. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you have a wonderful week or weekend, depending on when you're listening to this. So long, everybody.
Klaana forever. Bye-bye.